We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Go on without me. Just go!
A good soldier never leaves a man behind.
Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness.
Life, finds a way.
Welcome to Silver Screen Biases. Each week we pick a movie off of IMDb's Top 250 and dig into it. We're examining truth claims in critically acclaimed movies while also examining our own biases. I'm Nelson.
This is Jeff.
And this week,
we're talking about
The Shinning.
The Shinning. The biopic of the band The Shins.
The 1994 three-part television movie, The Shinning.
The Shinning. So don't shin your pants. It's going to be a heck of a ride.
Want to hear a great joke?
Yes, always.
This pirate captain, whenever they went to war, whenever a ship comes over the horizon, would put on a red jacket. And he'd call to his best mate and say, "Bring me my red coat." After a while, the best mate says, first mate, best man, whatever the term is, says, "Captain."
It's maid of honor, I think.
Oh, maid of honor. Says, "Captain, why do you always ask for your red jacket?" He says, "Well, that's because if I'm stabbed or shot and I bleed, I don't want the blood to ruin my jacket and the men to see me bleeding and lose."
Encouragement?
It's an M word.
Motivation?
No.
Mastication?
Probably. And lose mastication and become afraid.
That's it.
And the man's like, "Oh, interesting." And this continued on for a little while. And they were being hunted by the British Armada, and one day, a fleet of British ships comes up over the horizon, and he turns to his maid of honor and says, "Fetch me my brown pants." Because he just shinned his pants.
The only reason I'm not laughing is I've heard this joke before, and I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So yeah, I'm pro this joke. It just didn't hit because I already heard it.
I'm pro this joke. I'm anti-pirates.
Right, yeah. Yeah, my pirate policy is very right-winged.
Right-wing pirates.
Right-wing pirates, yeah. Yeah, we're talking about The Shining. 1980, Stanley Kubrick again. We're getting all of his movies taken care of.
How many Kubrick movies have we not covered from the top 250? 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Danny or Lloyd, some.
Larry, Barry Lyndon.
Barry Lyndon, yeah. Those might be the final two.
I have a quick way of looking this up. Hold on.
Do it. You won't.
I will.
No, you won't.
All right.
Oh, and Ratatouille.
We've covered Paths of Glory, Doctor Strangelove, Full Metal Jacket, Clockwork Orange. He has The Shining, mm-hmm. Barry Lyndon, mm-hmm. 2001 A Space Odyssey. Those are what's left to cover in the top 250. Left. The Killing, Eyes Wide Shut, and Spartacus have been in the top 250, but are no longer.
Thank goodness. Yeah, so we have two more as of right now.
That's right.
Oh, The Shining. Welcome to, if you're continuing our series of Spooktober, this is week two of Spooktober.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. You look great.
Thank you.
I think I made this joke last episode.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'll probably make it next episode.
I like being complimented on my looks.
Last year we did
a month of spooky movies,
which started with an Alfred Hitchcock.
Yep.
Then a Stanley Kubrick.
Uh-huh.
And then an Aliens. An alien.
An alien.
Now we're going to double the aliens.
Yeah, there's two of them this time.
Yeah, there's two of them.
That's the tagline for the movie. Yeah. Aliens.
And then a movie two about numbers, time. Which is off the pattern. Or we're doing a movie about numbers next week.
Yeah, last year we did The Exorcist.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Next week we're just Sesame Street, I think. Seven?
Seven.
Is that a Sesame Street movie?
Yeah.
I love to count.
Yeah.
To seven.
Have you ever seen
with Morgan
that?
Morgan Freeman.
Where it's, "I love to count," but then every time he says count, it's bleeped. And so it just sounds like he's cursing.
If you've not seen that,
it's linked below.
Go check
that out.
I introduced to my wife today on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with YouTube?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
There's a whole bunch of classic like 70s, 60s, even Elvis back in 50s music videos, but they removed the music to the music video and put in just like realistic sound effects.
Yeah.
So specifically seen, Dancing in the Street with David Bowie.
That one's a great
Mick
one.
Mick Jagger. I lose it every time.
Yeah.
Every time. It's
Have you seen perfect. Michael Jackson's Billie Jean?
Yes.
It's so yeah. good.
Yeah. What kind of got me back on the path of watching these again for the first time in a while was on Instagram. It came up in my feed, Blue Suede Shoes by Elvis.
Ooh.
But it was the music removed and him and just dubbed with, you know, realistic sound effects. And it was very pleasant.
Have you seen Britney Spears doing Toxic? Because no. in that one, she's like in a leather suit. And so it's just real squeaky leather, squeaky movements. In the music video, she sings almost nothing of it. So you just see a lot of like silent squeaky leather and then Toxic and then more squeaky leather.
I need to watch that.
It's the best. Link below.
I appreciate those. Do you enjoy like the bad lip reading videos?
Sometimes. It's hit and miss.
I like it when they do the debates. Those are great. The Star Wars ones are always just because I love Star Wars. Like I always enjoy those ones. But then the football ones. I think those are the three ones where I'm like, I'll watch these if they put new ones out.
You know what I really like? Have you ever seen Shreds?
No.
So they take these old music videos or newer ones as well. But then they take anything where there's an instrument or vocal on screen. Right. So for example, One Direction. It's just the guys singing. There's mm-hmm. no people playing music. Right. So the music's fine. But then all of their voices are like pitchy and their voices are cracking. There's one that's the Beach Boys. And it just kills me every single time. I'll show you after this recording if we can remember. It's one of my favorite. Linked below. Boys, Beach
that's
Boys.
That's my
shreds.
Type of humor. I appreciate that. I have not seen those before.
In fact, Jeff, let's pause and watch it right now because it's that good.
We'll be right back. And we're back.
Oh, man. I needed that.
That was refreshing. That was wonderful. Good job, Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Did it again. Still making hits.
Another hit.
Yeah. I'm going to be doing a deep dive of those later.
Yeah.
Anywho, The Shining.
The Shining.
Stanley Kubrick. I'm missing a name. Stephen King. Stephen King. Is this our first Stephen King?
Yes. There's only two... I was looking through it. There's only two Stephen King adaptations in the top 250.
What's the other one?
Guess. You know what? You're never going to guess it.
It's not Inside Out.
No.
It's not Coco.
No.
It's not Finding Nemo.
Uh-uh.
It's not Star Wars.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
It's number one.
Shawshank Redemption, Stephen King?
Apparently. It's based on a short story by him.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hold up.
Wait a minute. Put a little funk in it.
Man, I'm being humbled again. This is my favorite movie. I did not know it's connected to Stephen King. Because I knew Green Mile's Stephen King.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Which is Green Mile's on.
Is it?
Green Mile's on the top two.
Green Book.
Stephen King. Green Shawshank
Mile?
Redemption.
Green Mile's on the top two.
Green Mile.
Yeah. Here's something about Stephen King that I want to say.
I think it's on the top two. I'm questioning it.
I think he's a wildly overrated writer. Now, I want to be clear that when I say that...
Number 28.
I've never read any of his books, and this is the second adaptation of his books that I've read.
You read this?
No.
Oh.
I've seen.
Gotcha.
I've seen Shawshank once a while ago. I saw this for the first time for this episode. But despite all that, I'm still firmly of the opinion that this man who I know nothing about is wildly overrated.
Stephen King. Wow. The Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. That changes things. I've seen the remake of the It movie, like the one they did not too long ago, and then they made the sequel to mm-hmm. it. I have not seen part two.
The sequel to It is It's.
It's.
There's two of them now.
It's. I haven't seen the sequel to that one, but I liked the first one. I thought the first one.
Wait, which first one? The Tim Curry first one or
the modern day?
With Vecna.
Yeah. One of the Mikkelsen brothers.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought he was a Skarsgård.
There it is, Skarsgård. Yeah, sorry. I've got Mikkelsen on the brain because of Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skarsgård. Yeah, one of the Skarsgård family. Yeah, no, okay. It's fun. Well, The Shining. Had you seen this before?
No. I've seen a lot of memes about it.
Yeah.
I
knew one specific thing from this movie.
What was the thing you knew?
Okay, two things. The twins.
Okay.
In the hallway with the, you know, the little three-wheeler. And then...
Forever.
Where he says the, here's,
Here's Johnny.
It's Jonathan. Wait, what's the line? Was it? Wait. Hey, it's Johnny. I can never get it right.
You know, Jeff, audience, Jeff made this joke before recording, and I was bummed out because I wanted to be able to react to it live, and I was worried that if he made the joke again in the recording, I wouldn't organically laugh at it as well. I don't know why, but I didn't see it coming, and it got me. It's like, hi, I'm Jonathan. Axe-wielding madman.
Yeah, so...
But you didn't know Red Rum was from this.
I did not know Red Rum was from this. We were talking about that before. Like, now, yeah, that was like, oh, wait.
Did you know the twist that Red Rum was murder backwards?
Yes.
You did know that? Okay. I didn't know the forever was from this.
No, it's from Sandlot. Forever. That's a different
never seen forever. Sandlot.
You've never seen Sandlot?
No, we've discussed this before.
I know, but it still hits hard. Yeah, so yeah, the forever part in this movie is different, but...
I've heard that line quoted. So this movie is homaged so much.
Yeah. Actually, I just watched...
Homaged isn't a verb, right?
The act of homaging. Yeah.
to homage.
Yeah, to homage. You homage, I homage, we homage.
He, she, they homaged.
Yeah. Makes sense. I appreciated this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was underwhelmed.
Yeah.
I thought the cinematography...
Incredible.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
I love the camera angles. I love some of the...
One of the earliest uses of Steadicams, too. Yeah.
And like in the the long uncut scenes were cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the shots were vividly appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them. That lady in the bathtub was rough.
Yeah.
That was...
Jen watched this, or the first half of this with me, and that scene she really didn't like.
There was nothing positive that comes from that scene. But the music... Which by itself would be like, okay, it's a weird soundtrack. It worked.
Did you notice? Just
the sound, it was awesome.
In the opening credits, the music that plays at the very beginning of the opening credits, did you recognize it?
Yeah, it was the same music at the end of the movie when the credits rolled.
Because I recognized the opening credits from the end credits.
No, what was it from?
The first few notes, the first few bars of the opening credit music is the first few bars of the opening credit music in Clockwork Orange.
No, it's not.
It is.
Why would he do that?
Because he's a madman.
Kubrick, just when I'm trying to defend you, you go and bring oranges into it again.
Couldn't find it. But linked below is a video that discusses that, but it's a 30-minute video. We're not going to pause to watch that now. By a channel called Heavy Spoilers.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with Heavy Spoilers.
I've never watched any of their stuff. This was the first
they're
one.
They're not as heavy as you'd think.
Yeah.
He
sounds like a skinny guy.
They weigh the same as normal YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed this movie. It had me intrigued, but just like, for it being one of those iconic Halloween October movies, it wasn't scary.
No, in fact.
There was no part of it that I was like, oh crap, what's about? Like, it didn't allude to things real well. Like, it didn't build suspense real well.
No.
I still enjoyed it.
The music drove suspense a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, the music would get me so anxious at times that I'd have to like pause, like, this is just a movie, Nelson.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't. It didn't get me that far.
It got me.
Yeah. There was not a moment where I was just edge of my seat. But I was just like, all right, cool.
I wouldn't say
don't go into room 237. Oh, we're going to go in room 237 at some point. Like,
yeah. It was very Chekhov's gun in that way.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it had me on the edge of my seat, but it had me squirming in my seat, uncomfortable.
Okay. That could have been your...
bowels.
Your bowels.
Yeah.
But
real blocked up.
Let's go over some stats of the movie here. Mm-hmm. The Shining, 1980, directed by Stanley Kubrick, mm-hmm. rated R. It's about 2 hours and 26
What's
minutes.
What's that R stand for?
Red Rum. Book. It's based on a book written by Stephen King.
That's right.
Notable cast. We've got...
Book by the same name.
Stephen King?
Yep.
The book's name Stephen is Stephen
King's
King
book, Stephen King.
About.
Turned into the movie The Shining. Yeah.
It's complicated. A notable cast. Jack Nicholson, of course.
You know,
Hugh plays
a lot of
Jonathan.
Bands, their first album is a self-titled album. You never see an author do their first book a self-titled book.
It's my first collection called Jeff. It's a fictional book. Yeah, that's true. You know, J- Jack Nicholson, Nicholson.
Yeah. No relation.
Bad name for some reason. You know, very iconic actor.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything in 13 years, though.
What was the first movie you saw Nicholson in? Because I think that that oftentimes kind of like frames the way that you see an actor.
That's a good point. Let me go through this list real quick. Obviously, we'll edit it for... So my answer, for my first introduction to Jack Nicholson, I don't think I've seen this movie. And if I have, I don't remember a clue what it's about. But I remember the cover of the movie, the poster or whatever. And I know, I think of his face whenever I hear this name of the movie. As Good As It Gets.
Never heard of it.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's a movie my mom watched growing up or something. Like As Good As It Gets.
But that's what Jack Nicholson
is. Yeah, and he's on the cover. It's like, so then after that, I knew him from A Few Good Men, which I haven't seen, but I've always seen that clip.
That's a top 250, isn't it? I know we're going to see him again in Chinatown and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
So I know him from things, but the thing I know I've seen within my adult life that he's in, and it may be the only thing that I can recall that I know I've seen, is The Bucket List.
Never seen it.
Where him and Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. See how many buckets they can name.
Yeah. No, it's the live action version of the Chum Shrek. Bucket from SpongeBob.
Yeah.
No, it's
Chum Bucket, the movie, the game.
Chum Bucket, the movie, the game, the list.
From The Weekender.
Yeah. So I've seen that movie and I enjoyed it. But this was probably my first time in a very long time watching Jack Nicholson. Since that. That may have been when that movie came out, which was 2007.
Apart from pictures of Knicks games, I think this is the first time I've seen Jack Nicholson in something since I was 13. No, 12.
Yeah.
When I was 12, a group of kids from school, one of them, a pretty girl I had a crush on, invited me to go see a movie. I can't remember what movie it was, but I asked my mom. And this was the first time I'd ever been given permission to go see a movie without my parents. We get there, and Kelsey, kind of the ringleader of the group, says, actually, we're going to go see Anger Management. And I was like, well,
Adam Sandler,
I'm not 13, and that movie's PG-13, and I don't have permission to go see that. And she's like, it's okay, we're just going to lie about our ages. I was like, I'm not comfortable with this, but then we did it anyway. And
your dad listens to this podcast.
Yeah, and we went and we saw Anger Management, and it was a really uncomfortable experience for me because, like, on the one hand, I'm like, this is a funny movie, but also I am so dead when my parents come to pick me up and I'm not out yet because this movie's going to let out after.
Yeah.
And sure enough, my parents were very upset that when they came to pick me up, I wasn't there. And when I finally did come out, they're like, where have you been? And I was like, well, and I think I broke down crying. And I was like, So my parents went easy on me because they could tell, like, I felt social pressured into this situation. Yeah. So my first experience with Jack Nicholson, also my last until now.
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's always had a bad taste in my mouth because of that experience. Yeah. It's not his fault. It's Kelsey's fault.
Kelsey, if you're listening.
Kelsey, if you're listening, shame on you.
Yeah.
I don't remember her last name and it's probably different now.
Yeah. Don't subscribe. Yeah. No, actually, still subscribe.
Yeah.
Subscribe twice. In fact,
Kelsey, if you're listening, tell your friends about the show.
Yeah. But, and then we mentioned The Departed. The Departed's on the top 250.
Mm.
And that is Jack.
I have seen that. That is actually
Jackson Nicholson.
I've seen that once.
Okay. I've not seen that, but that is Jack Nicholson.
I've not rewatched Anger Management, even as an adult.
So, yeah, Jack Nicholson. So, that's the main, you know, that's the most notable cast in this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
The next one is, let me scroll down here for a second. Shelley.
Scatman Crothers.
Duvall.
Oh, Shelley Duvall. Is Shelley Duvall related to any other famous Duvalls?
I'll look up. I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. Is the first child to Bobby Ruth, a real estate broker, and Robert Dickinson Richardson. Robert Duvall.
Robert Duvall.
Is that the Robert? No. This is Robert Richardson Duvall, a lawyer.
So not the Robert
not
Duvall.
Not the Robert Duvall.
A Robert Duvall.
A Robert Duvall.
We love that joke, and this time it's finally true.
It hits. Yeah, she's not related to the Robert Duvall.
Was she married to a Robert Duvall? What's her relation to a Robert Duvall, not the Robert Duvall?
In 1989, Shelley met Dan Gilroy while filming the Disney Channel movie Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme. The two fell in love and they've been together ever since. So she's married to a Dan Gilroy.
So who's this Robert Duvall guy?
An actor.
Oh.
Yeah, he's in like... other movies.
Godfather Part 3?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Is he in that one? No, I think that's the only Godfather movie that he's not in.
It's not like we just went through it or something. But Shelley Duvall, what I know her from is the Robin Williams movie, Popeye.
Yeah.
She plays Olive Oil.
Olive Oil.
Oh, Popeye. That was a great on-spot impression. Don't criticize me much.
I've only seen that movie once, and it's been over 10 years. And I remember thinking, wow, this really stinks.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah?
I loved it. I haven't seen it since I was a child, but I just know I like...
I saw it for the first time and last time when I was 19.
All right, so we got Shelley Duvall. And then last but not least, we've got...
Scatman Crothers.
Scatman Crothers.
Which is one heck of a name, I tell you what.
Now, he was born Benjamin Sherman Crothers.
Mm. Strong name, too.
Yeah, but he went by Scatman Crothers. He died just a couple years after this movie came out.
Scooby-Dooby-Dop.
He's also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson, which either and I have not seen.
No, not yet.
And he's in the animated Aristocats. He plays Scat. Ooh. He plays Scat Cat.
Oh, does he?
In the Aristocats.
I love that movie.
Aristocats are great.
Creme de la Edgar.
So yeah, so let me go back to my notes here. So that's the notable cast. Did you have any other besides Scatman? Did you have any other notable cast that?
No, not particularly. Okay. But on Shelley Duvall and Scatman Crothers scene with Danny in the kitchen.
Yes,
has the record for the most takes. Something like over 150 takes.
Whose fault was it? The kids?
It's not clear.
The kids.
I think it's Kubrick's. Kubrick was known for liking to mess with his, for movies that where he wanted anxiety, he messed with his actors.
Oh, to create
tension,
anxiousness,
and also the stair scene where Shelley Duvall hits Jack Nicholson over the head. They filmed that a bunch of times.
That explains Jack Nicholson's slur. No, I'm just kidding.
And then the scene where Jack Nicholson chops down the door. They went through 80 doors.
I thought that was a one take. That was not?
They went through 80 doors.
Oh my gosh.
But here's the thing. Jack Nicholson had previously been a volunteer fireman. So like he knew the proper technique to make it efficient. But they still did like 80 takes of it.
And that's when he says, hi, I'm Jonathan.
Hi, this is Jonathan.
Oh man. Yeah. So 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah.
Number 64 as of today on the top 250.
Yeah.
83% tomato meter, 93% audience.
Yeah. It debuted at 150 and jumped to 90 around September 1997. Slowly climbed up, peaking at 44 in 2012. And it's been tapering down since.
You liked it though, overall? Or did you not? What was your first take? What was your gut reaction?
Throughout the movie, I was like, I am not liking this. I'm uncomfortable. I don't like this. I finished it and thought, I'm glad that I've seen this, but I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read something that we're going to read through. 6 fan theories. These are like one paragraph
abbreviations. Is it like their interpretation on how to interpret the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because yeah, I had a lot of questions.
Then I watched... Analyzing Evils, that's a great YouTube channel linked below. I haven't watched Analyzing Evil since we did Psycho, which is a shame because it really, like so many movies we've done, he's covered the villains from. So I watched the Analyzing Evil. That one really talks about the book a lot as well. Then I watched Heavy Spoilers. And after watching the Heavy Spoilers video, also linked below, I was like, you know what? This movie deserves a rewatch. So I do intend to come back to this in the future because I really respect Kubrick as a director. Again, before we did the show, Jeff, like I knew who Kubrick was. I knew what his movies were. Hadn't seen a single one for some reason.
Right.
I've come to really, really, really respect his ability to create. And this is something we've said before. His movies make you feel something, right?
Amen.
And this one made me feel uncomfortable the whole time, which is not an experience I want in a movie.
Yeah,
but that he was able to do that so well is incredible.
Coco.
And one of the ways that he did this which at first, like, you can write off as a cinema sin, but, like, he really knows what he's doing, is by messing with your memory of what you've just seen. Because your brain, de facto, wants to make things make sense. And when things don't connect, it makes you uncomfortable. And when he's able to put that in your subconscious instead of your instead of making you think it, it makes you even more uncomfortable. So here's two big ways he did that, for example.
Number one. No, start with number two. Start with number one.
All right. Number one, the layout of the hotel doesn't work.
Doesn't make sense.
Rooms change where they were. And then also on top of that, you have at least three times I can think of where a single shot take. So, for example, Danny on his trike, single shot takes. There are things that are where they can't be. Almost like a fever dream.
Right.
When they go and look in the freezer, you can see next to the freezer, there's an office door. They go into the freezer. When they come out of the freezer, they're in a different part of the kitchen.
I did not pick up on that.
I didn't either. But those are those things that, like, it's your subconscious that gets at you. And then another one was at the very beginning when Johnny goes into the office. You see him go into the office, and as he turns in towards the office, you see that the hall goes forward and takes a left. So this office is inside the building, but then you get inside the office and there's an exterior window where there can't be one.
Right.
And later you see that same office and there's snow blowing outside. So you know it's a real exterior office, but there can't be one there. So I think he's trying to mess with, like, he's trying to tap into the way buildings work in dreams. So there's that. That's the one of the big ones. And then this other one is, again, like, both of these are things where, like, if it was a different director, people would be like, oh, that's because it's sloppy filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But it's too, because we know what kind of caliber director he is, we know it's intentional. Furniture gets moved or is flat out missing from one shot to the next. Now, again, any other director would be like, okay, something got messed up clearly. But there's several times where Jack is talking to Wendy, I think her name is. And you see a shot of Jack. He's talking to her. And behind him is a chair and table. And it turns back to her. And then it goes back to him. And in the new shot, it's a blank wall behind him. And you don't know it. Film nerds have figured this out over time. But your subconscious notices it. And it makes you uncomfortable. And it adds to the tension and discomfort of the movie. So I really want to see the movie again just to kind of get another kind of grasp on this. I didn't enjoy it, but it fascinated me after the fact reading some of this stuff.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. Yeah. I was disappointed on how I wasn't scared or like it. I don't know. Maybe just because I watched it during the day or something, but just it never once gave me anxiousness. Like, it was actually even the least scary parts where it was just the more cabin fever moments of just,
yeah,
those parts were more relatable than it was like the blood coming through the elevator
two
doors
weeks to
or
flatten
whatever,
the like, curve cabin fever related.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like,
for some people, solitude and isolation can of itself become a problem.
But I honestly was okay with it, and I was happy with the movie. I was like, okay, whatever, you know, I'm enjoying this, and it's a movie, I'm entertained. But then the ending happened. Then they showed that dang picture at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's not like a reveal, like, okay, spoiler alert, Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
When you finally realize you've seen Sixth Sense.
Right? Yeah, okay. That Bruce Willis was the child the whole time.
No, he's an alien from the movie Signs.
Yeah.
No, when you put it all together connected. And you see that, okay, we watch him get shot and then he die. He gets shot at the beginning of the movie. And then the next scene, he's like, but then they piece all those things together and you're like,
oh, you're talking Sixth Sense.
Bruce Willis. I'm talking Bruce Willis.
I've never seen The Sixth Sense.
You've never seen Sixth Sense.
No, but I know the twist. Everybody knows the twist.
Like, and he's dead.
So I thought you were talking to the shot. I was like,
no.
He did not get shot. No,
so like, but when you're comparing it to a movie that, like, that movie, even though I know how it ends,
yeah,
there's still moments in that movie where it's just like, it makes me uncomfortable. I get anxiousness because of, like, the spookiness. Mm-hmm. This movie didn't have that until the ending. And then when they showed that picture, I'm like, wait, never once during this movie did I think that maybe Jack Nicholson was a man out of place. And so not only was I left untormented, unscared, unsuspended. I don't know if that's the right phrase. I was also just confused. And Christopher Nolan type of mind, you know, melt type of,
or M. Night Shyamalan. Wait, what?
It was more of just like a, oh, come on, what? There's nothing that this doesn't make sense.
My
like,
first time I was through more this movie,
just frustration, confusion.
My first time through this movie, I felt like a lot of the stuff was Kubrick just being like, throw it in there. A lot of that stuff. But I know from watching his other stuff how deliberate he is as a director. So there's got to be something to it. Before we go a whole lot further talking about this kind of stuff, this movie cost $19 million to make
in 1980. $19 million, okay.
Which is about $71 million today.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of practical effects.
Yeah.
I mean, barely if any CGI or computer, like... Yeah, okay. I mean, that, yeah, that's not a super high budget these days. And that, yeah, that checks out. I will want to say this movie came out the same year as, oh, Das Boot was 81. I was thinking it was an actual, like, same year release. But this, and just, it felt like the same type of production quality from Das Boot in this. Like, obviously different production and stuff, but like, technology was about the same for both of those.
Yeah. The other two top 250 movies that came out in 1980, Raging Bull and Elephant Man.
I don't know either of those. And we could talk about the ending here. Like, it just, it left me confused, not terrified. And I think that's why I was just okay with it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I wrote on my Letterboxd review, there was moments where Jack Nicholson was acting and it was believable. Then there's other moments where I'm like, I feel like you're overacting. Because he's so animated, there was times where he was doing stuff and I'm just like, dude, chill out. Like, you're not even terrifying. It's almost like, he almost like went theater mode, in my opinion. Like,
the top animated.
Like, that was a little bit of off-putting for me.
Yeah.
But again, I still enjoyed the movie. Like, it wasn't one of those ones where like, I left mad and hating it. But it was just like, I think these were all these things added up for me just being underwhelmed.
I think, that, again, that's something that's intentionally in the movie. And it's
his overacting.
Yeah, it's his descent into madness.
But that was okay. I mean, I guess you could argue that he was, well, especially with the ending, like he was always mad or something, like because like it was even some of the times before, like he was really even in the hotel.
So let's,
he would say some lines, and I'm just like,
let's talk about six theories, and then I'm going to give you one other one that's, you know, not what? Really listed here.
Let's do six of them. Okay, let's do six of the six theories.
And then I'm going to give you one other one that's not listed here. Theory one, the moon landing.
No.
The Shining moon landing connection is the one theory that extends film and into the life of the work of Stanley Kubrick in general. The core of the Shining moon landing theory posits not only was the 1969 moon landing a hoax, but that Kubrick was the one who constructed the fake footage. This idea even served as the basis for a mockumentary film from director Matt Johnson called Operation Avalanche. Linked below. This broader theory became directly connected to The Shining as Kubrick's subtle way of validating the claims. Those who believe The Shining moon landing theory point to Danny's wardrobe, specifically the spaceship sweater with Apollo 11 written on it, which was the name of the rocket used in the moon landing. Further evidence includes the cases of Tang in the Overlook's pantry, and the otherwise innocuous change from room 217 in the novel to room 237 in the film. This is thought to reference the estimated 237,000 miles between the Earth and the Moon, even though this number is inaccurate. This is one of the more popular and widely circulated The Shining theories, but it's also one of the sillier interpretations. In order to buy into The Shining conspiracy theories in this vein, you need to already be on board with the moon landing being a hoax, which of course it wasn't, says the author of this article. What do you think of that? I don't find that one terribly convincing.
It's fun. I don't find it convincing. Just while we're on the topic, do you believe that the moon landing was real?
From what I know about what the government has admitted to doing, it would neither surprise me that it did happen nor that it didn't happen.
That's fair. I believe it. I mean, I definitely know we've been into space since then.
One thing that moon landing conspiracy theorists say, and I do find this a fairly convincing point, is if we've been there before, why haven't we been there since?
It's expensive and we have no need to go back. Let's move on. No more questions.
I think that's a convincing, I think that's a reasonable response.
Yeah.
Theory number two, Native American genocide. This is one of the more compelling Shining theories, and there is a lot of ancillary evidence to support it. Simply put, the Shining analysis posits that the film is just as much about the genocide of Native Americans as it is about ghosts haunting the hotel. Here are some of the most obvious clues supporting this theory. The hotel is built upon a Native American burial ground and is decorated with various works of Native American art. There are also various historical parallels that support the theory that Kubrick wanted to express subtle themes surrounding the genocide of Native Americans. Additionally, lines of dialogue such as "white man's burden" further support this association. The Overlook's construction in the early 1900s and the photograph of Jack in the 1920s both pose interesting clues. The sentence is confusing to me, so maybe you can help me figure it out. These dates line up to the precise year that lightning strikes hit a monument, a town wrought with countless Native American deaths. I think it,
so. There's a monument that was struck by lightning.
I think we're missing the word in there.
Yeah.
Believers in this theory also suggest that the tidal wave of blood in the famous elevator scene represents the collective spilled blood of Native Americans.
That'd make more sense to me than it just being there the way it is.
That's true. And also we know from Kubrick's other works that he likes to highlight injustices in his movies. Another theory that I saw on this, not listed in this, takes the Native American thing and says that he might also be doing not just that, but also tying in the Holocaust. On Danny's sweater, the number 42 is on the shoulder. And apparently that has something to do with a year of the I don't know exactly. Apparently it ties in. So the number 42 is on his shoulder. There are 42 cars in the parking lot when we first see the parking lot of the hotel. And then 237, when multiplied 2 by 3 by 7, I think, equals 42.
2 times 3 is 6. 6 times 7 is 42, yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Could all of that be coordinated? Sure. Could it also be movie nerds looking for things that aren't there and finding coincidences? Yes.
Yeah. But that one's believable. I mean, it takes place in Colorado.
Yep.
They talk about Native Americans. Like they acknowledge in the movie, they talk about all those things.
They said that during the construction of it, it was attacked by a couple different Native American raiding parties.
And was anything going on in the 70s, in late 70s? That had to do with Native Americans to where like him. Or I guess when was this novel wrote?
That's a great question.
Let me look that up.
You look that. Well, here's the thing though.
77.
The book was
77. The movie was 80.
So. Yeah. Now we're going to come back to the book and the movie connection here in a minute. And I think you're going to find it really interesting.
Okay.
But let me ask ChatGPT.
Our friend Chad. Here's Chad. I'm going to overdo that joke this episode. Just so everyone knows what the expectations are. Well, while you're typing too, I guess one of my minimal criticisms is like Jack Nicholson's wife wasn't, you know, like in Psycho, there was the iconic scream and like it goes down like horror movie history. Mm-hmm. She wasn't bad, but like she just wasn't, I don't think she was iconic when it came to her reactions to horrific things. Mm. Like I just didn't find her like, stuck in my head for the rest of my time, like that image. Like it just everything was underwhelming.
Okay.
Wasn't bad. It was just like, oh, okay, you're okay. Like the girl from Psycho, like I can still picture that. I can still hear her scream.
Yeah.
Like that's iconic. Like
yeah.
None of that was.
So it seems like there was a handful of things. Some tribal land claims and legal battles throughout the 70s. The Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act in 1975, American Indian Movement, founded in 1968, Trail of Broken Treaties, a caravan of Native American activists in 1972.
Okay.
It's possible that there was enough in the zeitgeist.
To make a political commentary of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what else we got? What other theories?
So moving on, theory number three, hell.
Threery.
Number three.
Yes.
This is one of the most straightforward, most believable The Shining theories in circulation. This theory posits that the Overlook Hotel represents hell, or another form of afterlife for the ghosts, such as purgatory. Figurative representations of hell can be found in other horror films, so it wouldn't be a stretch to imagine Kubrick was doing the same thing. The horrific happenings, the fact that the Torrance family is trapped, and the suggestion that Jack has been in the hotel for decades support The Shining analysis that the Overlook represents hell. The layout of the hotel, seeming to fluctuate throughout the film, is also used as evidence towards this interpretation. Proponents of this theory also point to objects and furniture in the background moving and disappearing between takes as further evidence. However, skeptics would say these could easily be a result of simple continuity errors. In his interview, Stephen King supports the notion that the Overlook Hotel could represent hell. He also suggests that Kubrick dismissed the notion when King brought it up to him. Perhaps explaining The Shining in this manner falls more in line with the book rather than the film, despite the conjecture to the contrary. Jeff, what do you think?
It's plausible. If you're watching it through that those eyes, like, there'd be a couple things that wouldn't make sense to me. So does that mean, like, the wife and child were in hell?
Mm.
Going back to my Sixth Sense reference, like, the thing that made you question, you know, or not even think about the fact that, you know, the character was dead the whole time was the fact that from our perspective, he was interacting with the other characters in the film. His wife and stuff. Like, so you see Bruce Willis's character interacting from our perspective. In this movie, Jack Nicholson very much interacts with everyone else in the film, even more so than what Bruce Willis's character did in that movie. So, like, if he was in hell, does that mean that his wife, his child were in hell? Does that mean that the, you know, Scatman Carruthers character left hell to go to Miami for the summer? Like, it's like, there's some inconsistencies. Like, if it was purgatory, that, you know, then no one should be able to leave. Like, I guess it can make sense for an allegory type of sense, but not for, like, a straight storytelling, like, not for a solidified solution of what we saw in the movie.
Mm.
I can see it as a representation, but there'd be some faults in that theory.
Yeah. This next one's an interesting one, and I think falls somewhat in line with Kubrick's tendency to make political points and commentary.
Okay.
Theory number 4, CIA experimentation.
Okay.
This next theory also suggests that the continuity errors are actually intentional and represent something different entirely. This is one of the more far-fetched The Shining theories. This interpretation suggests that the changing layout of the hotel and moving objects are metaphors to indicate that the Torrance family is suffering from hallucinations. The core of this theory suggests that The Shining is secretly about CIA mind control experiments. Those who believe in this theory point to a particular poster visible on the wall in the background as proof. The poster in question depicts a skier, despite Jack being told there is no skiing in the area. On its own, this again seems more like a tiny error rather than an intentional clue, but believers of this theory point to the word below the skier as proof, Monarch. The supposed connection is that Monarch is believed to be the code name for one of the CIA's mind control experiments, though this is mere conjecture. This scene, this poster actually caught my eye in that scene.
Is that his interview?
No.
No.
This is when Danny first meets the twins.
Oh. Okay. I didn't pick up on anything like that. You know, I got a little bit of, like, just questioning the sanity of everyone involved because, like, the child, you know, alluded to the child having The Shining, but then.
And he's got Mr. Thimble in his finger.
Yeah.
Sorry, but, not Mr. Thimble, Mr. Bimbo.
Yeah, but, like,
it's Tony in this, but in the Muppets, right. Treasure Island, it's Mr. Bimbo.
But then, like, overall, the stuff that the child's dealing with really didn't affect or have anything to do with Jack Nicholson going crazy.
And the things, like, so just, that the child was experiment. So here's the weird thing. The things the child experienced were right.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, I can get experimentation. I can see that in there. Like, yeah. Okay.
This one
still doesn't make the movie understandable.
No, it's pure conjecture because Monarch is believed to be a CIA. Like, we know the code names for a handful of CIA, FBI, NSA things because they've
been leaked
or they've been
classified.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Monarch is conjecture.
And Monarch's also the company that's going after Godzilla right now, so they're that's a little true. Busy.
And Mothman and King Kong.
That's right.
Theory number five.
Mothra.
Mothra, not Mothman. That's a different thing. Theory number five, Theseus and the Minotaur.
Ooh.
This theory goes all the way back to classic Greek myths. Theseus was a king of Athens and one of the legendary heroes of old. He was a figure associated with a variety of grand adventures throughout his life, the grandest of which being his ordeal with King Minos Minotaur in the Labyrinth. This fan theory posits that Danny is Theseus and Jack is the Minotaur in Kubrick's extended metaphor. The most obvious parallel is that both stories feature their combating opponents showing down in a sprawling maze. A stone labyrinth in the case of the Minotaur, and a snowy hedge maze in the case of The Shining. Supporting this theory are the way Danny slash Theseus overcomes Jack slash the Minotaur, which parallel each other to a certain degree, but not explicitly. Along with a painting on the wall of the Overlook that could be interpreted as the head of a bull atop the body of a man, though not in a literal sense. Those who believe this theory point to a handful of other small details, but to be perfectly honest, every other piece of quote, evidence in support of this theory is beyond far-fetched and not to be taken seriously. Not listed here, but mentioned in somewhere else that I saw, I think it was the Heavy Spoilers, that Monarch poster of the skier, it kind of looks like its knees are backwards, like a Minotaur might be.
Mm.
To me, I don't give that a lot of credence because Minotaurs have human legs.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen one in real life, so it's, you know, whether or not we can fact check that in real life.
I'll ask around and see if we have one available.
That's a fun one. I'm currently going through the sequel series of Percy Jackson. So I like that theory just because.
What's the sequel series?
Apollo? Like The Lost Hero is the first one.
Okay. Are you reading the Rick Riordan books in order? Like, did you do the Egypt and Norse ones?
No, yeah. I'm doing all the Percy Jackson adjacent ones.
Okay. Well, then you're going to get them out of chronology.
Right, but Percy's in this one. No, I'm doing, okay, according to the list, this is the next series to read.
Okay.
It's the Lightning Thief series, and then this one, which is also about Camp Half-Blood. Annabeth is looking for Percy. I'm still in chapter two.
We were reading them with the kids. The fourth of the Percy Jackson ones, just, I wasn't enjoying it. The kids weren't enjoying it.
The Labyrinth one?
I think. And then we switched to Wingfeather Saga, which is phenomenal.
The Lost Hero, which is part of the Heroes of Olympus.
Okay.
So that's, when I looked up the order, I heard that this is the next series chronologically for Percy Jackson.
Okay.
Either way, I'm enjoying that.
I know that the Norse and Egypt ones are all in the same continuity.
Correct. Yeah, they're all in the same universe.
I really hope that Disney Plus nails the Percy Jackson
movie. I agree.
So theory number six.
I like that theory just because of what I'm currently reading. But
the thing is, I've not seen a lot of Greek stuff show up in Kubrick stuff yet. Doesn't mean it's not. Just
right.
I think that a political commentary is more like him.
Correct.
From what I've seen of the other things that we've seen of his. Theory number six, I think this one's a pretty good
valid.
One. Pretty valid one. Child abuse.
Yeah.
The last of our The Shining movie theories is the most cogent of the bunch, The Shining Abuse Theory. It is less of a stretch to consider this interpretation as a distillation of clear subtext on child abuse that some viewers might miss. However, there are two different levels to this theory, and one is far more apparent than the other. This is also one of the only theories to be supported in part by Stephen King's novel alongside the figurative representation of hell. Where the clear subtext of The Shining abuse theory diverge is on the type and extent of the abuse. Physical child abuse is clear from Danny's broken arm, his trauma response, and the words of his child psychologist. But some take the theory farther and interpret the film as a representation of sexual abuse as well. The same physical abuse evidence is used alongside other interpretable details. The infamous bear costume scene.
And the sexual abuse? Yeah.
And the quick view of Jack reading a Playgirl magazine are pointed to as evidence that Danny's abuse goes beyond physical into sexual. The major heavy spoilers talked about the Playgirl. So when they as a family first get to the hotel and Jack is sitting there reading and eating breakfast and the hotel manager comes over to him, the magazine he's reading there is Playgirl, not Playboy. Mm-hmm. Meaning he's looking at pictures of mostly men.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover of that particular issue, because movie nerds have figured out which issue it was, one of the subheadlines to an article in there is about incest. Now,
yuff.
Could all that be on purpose connections? Who knows? It's
I think that could be very, a very easy assumption, though. And then, you know, later in the episode, you know, in the movie, you know, you see the marks on his neck and it's questionable. Like, so even like the legitimate subject of you hurt Danny, like, what did you do? Yeah, I could see that.
Those who believe this theory also suggest that it indicates the events that happened to Danny inside of room 237, which are not shown to the audience. But Danny claims it was a woman. One fan theory I saw said that, and this is where we need to get into some other things not clarified in this movie or this book, but that do come up in the sequel book, which was also turned into a movie of the same.
Book. Oh, so Dr. Sleep is a sequel book?
Okay. So Dr. Sleep is a sequel movie based off of the sequel book as well. The book came out in like 2013.
Okay.
Now, one thing that shows up in the movie Dr. Sleep, which I've not seen, but somebody else claimed.
And for the listeners, Dr. Sleep came out not too long ago. Actually, I have it right 2019. Here. 2019, and it's about the adult Danny,
played by Ewan McGregor,
dealing with the same type of stuff. Just because we're on the subject, I was going to wait till later. The actor that played the young Danny back when Jack Nicholson's movie, he does have a cameo in this movie just as a spectator and stuff. That's so right. They do acknowledge the original child
but
actor.
But he's not an actor
anymore. He's not an actor anymore. So, but yeah. So, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things that that movie tells us is that alcohol dulls the senses of The Shining. And then one thing that Scatman Crothers' character tells us about his relationship with his grandmother is that The Shining is a genetic condition. So some people, and I think that the movie really does support this, and the book certainly supports this as well, say that Jack also has The Shining.
Oh.
And so using The Shining, he like astral project attacked his son in 237. Is one theory. Another theory is that the hotel is a living, haunted thing of its own.
A breathing organism?
Mm-hmm. And that it wants Jack. Sorry, it wants Danny, because Danny's very powerful with The Shining. But it can't get Danny because Scatman Crothers has already told him, just chapters in a book, man, just pictures, it's nothing. So he's already kind of like mentally blocked himself.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack, because he is only a few months sober, despite that incident with the arm where he quit drinking was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's only a few months sober. Jack isn't as mentally prepared. And so the hotel attacks Jack to get to Danny. I don't know how much. I think the hotel is haunted theory works well. It also explains why Jack was seeing things, but also why Wendy was seeing things.
Mm.
When Wendy started seeing things, my assumption was, oh, they're both lost their mind.
Yeah.
They've all gone insane. So I think that picture, because we got the dialogue, you know, you've always been here, that came from. So here's some more weird inconsistencies, the way the movie messes with you. Jack tells that waiter character, you killed your wife and daughter. Daughters.
Daughters.
That waiter character has twin daughters. But the guy with a similar last name.
So they were 8 and 10.
8 and 10. So it's not the same daughters.
Yeah.
So then,
and the name's a little different too.
Then their first name's different, but the last name's the same. But also, that happened in 1970. This guy clearly lives in 1920s.
Yeah.
It's different people.
You go ahead, because this is one of the theories I was going to bring up to you.
Yeah. And then, so I think, and then also the picture of Jack in that 1920s photo, I think. That this hotel, like that picture, is the way it's like its badge of honor of these are the lives I've taken.
Oh, okay. Okay. To rebuttal yours.
Okay.
One of the things I've discovered or discovered while I was researching was that they all could be the same person.
Okay.
But it's a form of reincarnation, not just entrapment.
Okay.
So Jack Nicholson's character could have been there originally back in the 20s.
Yeah.
Died, born again, new family. But like this article I was reading was just talking about like he's not trapped at the hotel, but he's trapped in the cycle of the hotel always brings him back. So the picture in the 1920s was him, but then reincarnated, come back to do it all over again. And it's, they're stuck in this cycle of just, yeah, you can free yourself with death, but you'll be back. Like, and so talking about the two girls and stuff, like same thing with that. Like it's, they're the same person, but not the identical one that's being discussed earlier on in the movie.
Yeah.
So those could be two girls that were killed by someone, but there was also another one. Like, and then you see the one scene where like the whole room's filled with skeletons. So like, yeah. So we know there's a lot more stories and lives of people that we don't even touch on.
And in the book, apparently we get a lot of
more characters,
a lot more previous groundskeepers.
Yeah.
So I get,
but that's still not enough to answer the questions and to solidify the ending. Like, like it's so vague.
You want to hear another weird thing about this movie?
Yeah.
All right. Stephen King got the idea for this when he booked a stay at a Colorado hotel at the end of October, days before they closed down for the season.
Was it the Stanley Hotel?
No.
Okay.
It was a different hotel.
Speaking of which, you listeners can fund Nelson and I's trip to Colorado to go visit this hotel. Mm-hmm. For a research project. So if you'd like to send Nelson and I out there, send checks to our parents' house.
Yes. Yep. Colorado Springs, 80995. The Shining was inspired, the idea of this creepy hotel, because he had booked the stay at a hotel with his wife. It was right before the end of the season. Almost nobody's there. He's walking the halls of this massive place, and he's like, you know, this could be kind of creepy when there's nobody here. And then the idea of Shining, also he took from a John Lennon lyric where his song Instant Karma, he sings the line, "We all shine on." And apparently that's where he lifted the term from for Shining. But here's where things get weird. When we first meet the wife, she's reading a copy of the book, The Catcher in the Rye. That caught my eye because that book has a lot of history to it. Mm-hmm. One of the significant parts of the history of The Catcher in the Rye is that Mark David Chapman, who murdered John Lennon, after he murdered him, sat down and was reading Catcher in the Rye, waiting for the police to show up.
Creepy.
And he did that 2 months after this movie came out.
That's weird.
Isn't that weird?
That's weird.
So The Shining gets inspired by John Lennon, becomes a movie. The movie references Catcher in the Rye. The man that kills John Lennon months later, reading Catcher in the Rye. What a weird little set of loops there.
Yeah. Man, Stanley Kubrick, you're a genius.
I was really impressed when you convinced that one guy to kill John Lennon.
So I couldn't explain this movie to someone. Yeah. Outside of the fact that it's like, yeah, it's about a family, gets cabin fever, goes a little crazy in a haunted hotel.
Yeah.
But I can't explain how it all functions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that didn't. That I still overall enjoyed it. Like I gave it a 7 out of 10 on the 250. Like I enjoyed it. I would watch it again. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but just yeah. I know I feel like I've been pessimistic in talking about it. But like it was entertaining. It just wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or it did. I didn't receive it the way I assumed I would. Mm. But I love the cinematography, love the, yeah, I'm just beating a dead horse and stuff. But something else that came up as I was reading about this movie was, and this is just very, you know, on the nose, but like this movie in a non-science fiction way talks about isolation, you know, and you
have, for some people, solitude and isolation can of itself become a problem.
And, yeah. And you mentioned that earlier, and you know, and we, you know, as listeners, we know not too long ago, we experienced some sort of, you know,
yeah,
mandatory isolation almost.
2 years to flatten the curve.
Yeah. Like that was the hardest part to sit with because like that was the most relatable.
Yeah.
The just being in this house, this quiet, empty house all alone with nothing to do and you can't leave.
You know, what's interesting too, is that Stephen King was a real big champion of lockdowns. He was all for it.
Well, it's good content for writing, you know?
Yeah. I just need some time to write.
Yeah. Even before you start to dive into the family of between Wendy and Jack, like you can kind of get the sense that there's something going on between the husband and wife. Like they're not all hunky dory. Like you could see there was some tension with them right from the beginning. For any wife to agree to a husband to go spend months in an abandoned hotel. Like, I just question that. Like, that wasn't believable. And to have a, how old was Danny? Is Danny, like, in the movie? Like that, that's not a logical decision for a family. To go like
keep it in mind, it's also 1980s. The idea of a single income family is very plausible. Supportive wife, young family. I didn't find that part unbelievable.
Really? I feel like that's just a big ask for an aspiring author to do. Now, granted, if the character, if Jack Nicholson's character was Dan Brown or J.K. Rowling or the Stephanie Meyer that did like
Stephen King.
An author that has that money, like, then it'd be believable and it'd be like, okay, yeah.
It was a paid job too.
It was a paid job, but like, I would have been like, what's the catch? Like there, I would have been like, there's something else to this, like to just go live in this abandoned hotel for months for you to just go write your book.
The catch is that I'm going to bash your brains in.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I had a hard time believing that. And so like, so I immediately was thinking, okay, like, is she being coerced? Well, we find out that he manipulates her and like, she doesn't have a say in this at all. And she's just, I kind of got the feeling right off the bat that there was some sort of marital dysfunction there.
She's also throughout the movie, a very meek character who submits to her husband.
As they should.
Even when she's terrified of him, she's still speaking in very polite language and,
right.
So I didn't find it unbelievable. The first time that he explodes at her and they have that big argument, Jen says to me, she should take Danny and just leave now. And
technically she could have left.
She could have. The sun, it hadn't snowed yet.
Yeah.
I said, what I see here, he's making no progress on his book. He's frustrated with himself. He's taking it out on her. He tore up the page, which means that there was nothing worth keeping on it.
Yeah.
And then we find out later that all that was probably on that page is all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Yeah.
There's a thing that Kubrick likes to do in his movie that has been dubbed the Kubrick stare. And it's when the character tilts his head forward, looks at, like, he's looking up over his eyebrows, basically. And he's got, like, a creepy grin on his face. And he holds that stare for a while.
It's definitely in A Clockwork Orange.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely in not Paths of Glory. I didn't see in the Paths of Glory, but it
might have been in there.
Full Metal Jacket.
Yep.
It's definitely in that one.
Yeah, I think it was in Doctor Strangelove.
And then it was in this one for sure.
So I knew that this was going to be in there. I didn't expect it to be 45 minutes in. It was so early in.
Mm-hmm.
He's already fully delusional.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen King hated this movie. He's come around to like it.
He hated Kubrick's interpretation of the book?
Yes, because Kubrick...
Was it drastically different?
It's drastically different.
Oh.
Kubrick basically said that the writing was uninspired. Stephen King had a contract that he had first draft of writing it, and Kubrick basically just threw out the first draft and wrote again. So there was a lot of tension between the two of them. The book apparently makes it much more clear that this place is haunted.
Okay.
And it also does a lot more time explaining, you know, Jack's upbringing, showing that Danny's shining is, he's truly is psychic, truly is gifted. And also apparently Wendy is a much more outgoing, adventurous character. So I thought that was interesting. Stephen King kind of bills himself as being a fairly progressive person. And so Jack's character is a misogynist, despite Wendy being a very strong woman. And I think that that's a fairly progressive writing style, but then we have this trope of old black voodoo sage, which is just so like, I mean, yeah. I understand you're from Portland, Maine and probably don't know any black people, but come on. Like, yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. Are you familiar with the term white man's burden?
No, I want to say yes, but I can't. No.
So when Jack has his first drink with Lloyd pours.
Was it a real drink? Like
I would have assumed no, and yet somebody unlocked that door, so maybe it was.
Yeah, because they said they removed all the alcohol from the building. So like I just didn't know what to believe at that point. I'm like, is he hallucinating drinking?
I thought he was hallucinating, but then somebody unlocks the pantry door. So clearly this haunted building can physically interact. Cause how else does Jack get out of that room? So maybe it's entirely possible the whiskey was a real drink.
It was Jack Daniels,
but,
too.
Yeah. Lloyd pours him a drink, and he says, the white man's burden, Lloyd, my man, white man's burden. And I was like, I know what this line is. I know what it's from. I don't know why it's here. White Man's Burden is a poem by Rudyard Kipling.
I'm familiar with that name.
He wrote The Jungle Book.
Oh, I love that movie.
Rudyard Kipling, I might get this detail wrong, either grew up in India or was there as an adult or both, as part of Britain's colonial control over India before India had its freedom. White Man's Burden is, some people say satire, other people say sincere commentary about the Europeans' responsibility to the less civilized areas of the world, read not white, to colonize and bring civility to those areas.
Okay.
Now, there's also a John Travolta movie called White Man's Burden. I haven't seen it.
About white man's burdens can't jump. There's also that one.
So when he said White Man's Burden, Lloyd, my man, White Man's Burden, I was like, where does this fit in? Now, if it's about Native American genocide, I think that line works great there. If it's not, I don't really see what that line has to do with anything. Mm. But then again, this is a guy that's clearly unhinged, so maybe it doesn't have to do with anything.
Right.
Your thoughts? Also, that's a line that I don't think is in the book. I think that's unique to the movie.
Yeah, I don't have any thoughts to that. I did get in the movie, Jack Nicholson's character says the N-word.
Yes, to the ghost.
To the ghost.
Who also says it twice with much more contempt.
Vigor, yeah. And up until that point, I didn't really get much racism themes, tensions in this movie and stuff. But when they said that multiple times, I was trying to think, like, okay, in the 80s, was this still
acceptable
for a white man to say this word? Or were, like, the fact that they were saying it in 1980 and it was a white guy saying it, this meant that there was some weight to it because this shouldn't be. So I didn't know culturally, like.
It's hard to say because, like, within our, so Jimmy Kimmel and Sarah Silverman both did blackface for comedy. I think Fallon as well. Like, so, like, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's hard. So much has shifted even within the last 10 years of what's acceptable here. That's true. It's hard to say. I would be surprised if this was not intended to be shocking to the audience.
Okay. And that was the first time I thought, like, okay, maybe there's some race aspects to this movie. But I couldn't pick up anything else outside of that. Like, and I couldn't connect the N-word to the Indian stuff that they've mentioned. Like,
right.
Two different demographics. I mean, granted, maybe it was just about racism in general and stuff and just, you know,
white hatred. Man's burden.
Yeah.
Colonialism. So
it could have been that too, but I just, that Manifest stuck out destiny. To me and I, yeah, that was.
Yeah. I thought that was a very bizarre line. I couldn't fit it with the whole movie until I saw one of those commentaries talking about, I was like, oh, that actually does make sense to put that there.
Yeah.
I saw one other commentary saying, no, he's using it wrong. He's talking about his alcoholism.
Mm.
I don't know how well I accept that theory.
Okay. I may not have much more for you.
All right. I got one more line.
You got one more? Let me have it.
This is Scatman Crothers. I can't remember his character's name.
Scatman works real well. I love it.
I can remember when I was a little boy, my grandmother and I could hold conversations entirely without ever opening our mouths. She called it shining. For a long time, I thought it was just the two of us that had the shine to us. Like, you probably thought you was the only one. There are other folks, though mostly they don't know it or don't believe it. In the book, he tells Danny that he doesn't, that Jack doesn't have it. But we also know, because books allow us to see inside people's minds, we also know that he tries to read Jack and he can't quite pin it. And something weird about him, like something's buried deep down. So I think the book, without explicitly saying it, is saying, yeah, he has it too. And that's why Danny has it. I'm interested. I haven't seen Dr. Sleep. I'm interested too.
I want to watch it because I'd be intrigued to continue the story. And I'm especially excited.
It's pretty well received.
I'm excited about it now, knowing that Stephen King wrote that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird that he would write. But I guess if Kubrick changed a lot from the first book to the first movie.
Yeah.
Does the second movie stayed true to the book or stayed true to the movie that was established.
I have no idea.
And if Stephen King wrote the, I'd have some questions like, would you know, which no did Stephen King, is that when Stephen King came around and said, okay, I'm okay with The Shining, with the way it was all.
I know he's come around to it. He's come to appreciate it.
I mean, he had to have wrote his sequel of the book based on his book. I'm curious if there's drastic changes between the second movie and the second book then. If he had inconsistencies there.
I know that the second movie is well received.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yep. Stephen King was so disappointed with Kubrick's adaptation that he put together a different adaptation in 1994, a made-for-TV movie. It's like three parts.
Are you serious?
It's a much more faithful to the book. Apparently, it is terrible.
Wait, is it called The Shining?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. Let me look.
Apparently,
this
it's very, very bad.
Because I want to watch that too then.
You know what? We kind of skimmed over this, and I think it deserves more attention. You brought it up once. I brought it up once. Some people, isolation and solitude can become a problem. We saw in 2020, alcoholism rates skyrocket. Domestic abuse skyrocket. A lot of these issues just through the roof. Suicides went way up. We are social animals. Even if you don't buy that we are divinely created beings like I think we are, and I know you think we are, even if you think we are just, you know, a product of evolution, it's undeniable that we are social creatures. And I think that what happened in 2020 was one of the most evil things in our generation, easily. I believe, sincerely, that the ideas were first brought about with the best intentions. But when the data no longer supported it, and they continued to double down, that can't be seen as anything less than evil.
Yeah. I mean,
that said, get your boosters, everybody. Make sure you're all caught up.
Stay within the regulations and guidelines.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. Hold on. This is really interesting. I think you'll find this fascinating. This is from the Mayo Clinic.
I'm more of a Helms guy.
Drugs and supplements, hydroxychloroquine, oral route. Description and brand names. Drug information provided by Merativ and Micromedics. U.S. brand name, Plaquenil. Descriptions. Hydroxychloroquine is used to treat malaria. It is also used to prevent malaria infection in areas or regions where it is known that other medicines, like chloroquine, may not work. And this particular part is very interesting to me. Again, this is the Mayo Clinic. Hydroxychloroquine may also be used to treat coronavirus COVID-19 in certain hospitalized patients.
Okay.
Do you remember what the scandal with hydroxychloroquine was?
I don't, no.
Okay. People were taking hydroxychloroquine because it's been used for tons of, like, for a very, very long time to treat malaria and other viral issues. When Joe Rogan got COVID, it was one of the many things that he used in his kitchen sink technique to treat it, COVID-19. And he was ridiculed for it. And the reason he was ridiculed for it, and the reason that other people taking it were ridiculed for it, is because hydroxychloroquine is also used, Jeff, to treat certain infections with horses. Because, like with a lot of medications, it has treatments for both humans and other animal species. The accusation was that people were taking it as a, like, were buying it from, like, Tractor Supply off the shelf for their horses and taking it and treating it for themselves. I've not seen sufficient evidence that this was happening, but people were saying that if you were hospitalized from hydroxychloroquine overdose, that you should be rejected from the hospital, especially if you weren't vaccinated. Because you're taking up precious medical resources for people that truly needed it and weren't using alternative therapies. So I just found that interesting.
That's so frustrating. People are dumb.
Yeah. It's my opinion that you should be permitted to treat your diseases any way that you see fit. If the result is that you end up causing yourself more harm than good, that is your responsibility. But the result could also be that you stumble upon treatments that people aren't aware of. This also goes for doctors, right? There are doctors that want to try out groundbreaking treatments and they can't get approval for it because to get FDA approval requires millions and millions and millions of funding. And in the meantime, because we're worried about possible side effects, we just let people die instead.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that I'm as passionate about as like self-defense, but I'm very passionate about.
Come at me, Nelson.
Yeah. I'm very passionate about like, let people decide for themselves what's best for themselves. I know it's shockingly consistent with everything else, I believe.
Yeah, one of these days, you're going to find yourself inconsistent. And I look forward to it consistently.
Stab in the dark. What's a thing that you think that I might be inconsistent about? Just take a stab at it.
Hair care.
I think that people, that businesses should be allowed to test on animals.
Dang it. You got me again.
All right. Do you have anything else on this movie that you want to talk about?
No.
It's a weird one because there's not a lot of truth claims in this movie, but there's a lot.
There's things. There's played, just a lot there's of scenarios weirdness. Played out that you can connect to some scenarios, but
the only indication in this movie that he's unhinged before they really like before they're left alone
is that he's driving a Volkswagen Bug.
Well, it's actually while he's driving the Volkswagen Bug. Danny says, asks who the Donner Party was, and he starts to explain, and Wendy gets frustrated, and Danny says, no, it's okay, Mom, I saw this on TV, and Jack's like, yeah, Wendy, he saw it on TV, and he does the Jack Nicholson eyebrows, and I'm like, okay, he's a little unhinged,
yeah,
but nothing like what we saw. I don't think it's a far stretch to say that he's a domineering person in their relationship. But I do think, based on the way we see her react, that the way he behaved in the hotel is new. Like, it was a scale.
And different.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I've not experienced or witnessed a lot of domestic abuse, so I don't know what that looks like. So fair. I might be wrong.
That's fair. And Jack Nicholson's Jack Nicholson's Jack Nicholson. So, like, when he early on in the movie, I'm just like, I think this is just how he is.
So could be.
Yeah. So I didn't interpret it that way, but I see what you're saying now. Like
with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where he's playing a lunatic. I think, I don't know. Maybe I suspect we'll see more of that. But Chinatown is like a crime noir, so it'll be interesting to see what he does with like a detective character. Mm. We'll see.
All right. Well, would you recommend this movie, Nelson?
I think I would. Would this be the first Kubrick you recommend? Like, if somebody's like, I want to start watching Kubrick movies, where should I start? Of the ones we've seen so far?
I did rate this above Dr. Strangelove, which was the highest one that I... So yeah, I put this above... This is my favorite Dr. Kubrick love movie that we've watched so far.
So far.
But they're all in the bottom half of my list.
Yeah.
But I would recommend it. It's an enjoyable watch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so far it's my favorite. I'm really holding on to Space Odyssey.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting
one. I'm holding on to that one.
Each of these movies have been so different, but like I said, each of them makes me feel something so sincerely.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. I think I'd say go watch Doctor Strangelove, then watch Paths of Glory. Watch them like back to back or as soon after as you can, because they're communicating the same thing or similar things with dramatically different approaches.
Yeah.
From the same director, and that will give you a glimpse into this guy's range as a director.
This movie's rated R. Would you change the rating?
No, needs to stay R.
There's nudity. It's not graphic, but it's long.
No, like, it's pretty. It's like, full frontal nudity.
Okay, so maybe what I meant by graphic, like, was it's not a sex scene.
No,
but there is a fully naked lady, and she's on screen for quite a bit.
Yeah,
I guess
she
I was
is.
Just saying, like, it's like passive nudity.
Passive nudity.
But either way, I don't think it was needed. I don't think her being naked versus
and also
her being in a bathrobe.
So
or like,
let's talk about the naked lady for a second. The movie doesn't explain why she's there. Yeah. And then Jack lies about not having experienced that seconds later.
Right.
In the book, we find out that she's a woman that took her own life in the hotel.
She drowned herself or something? Like
I don't remember. I don't know if I found out. I haven't read the book, and I don't know if what I was watching clarified. But, I mean, we didn't see any cuts or anything on her.
Right.
So
yeah, it's like, exactly. I guess that's what I meant by graphic. Like, there's no sex in this movie.
No.
There's some implied sexual action with the bear costume and stuff. Like there's some implied stuff. Like, nothing shown in a Clockwork Orange way.
No.
But that's what I meant by graphic. But yeah.
Yeah.
But there is very much full top, bottom nudity, female. Yeah. It's not needed. It was it did nothing for the story.
And a lot of violence, a lot of intense thriller aspects, and a fair bit of language.
Yeah. So yeah, ours. I'm curious to watch the TV version. Has it aged well?
I think pretty well.
I would also say pretty well. This is one of the movies I wouldn't be mad if they remade. Now, granted, they just did a sequel to it, so I don't see it happening, which is fine. It is also a very much a classic, and people adhere to it pretty strongly. But like, this one wouldn't break my heart if they remake it, just like they did it, Stephen King's It. Like,
so let's
they
say
modernized that. Like, I could see this one being modernized.
Let's say it's recast and redone. Who would you put in the Jack role of Black. Jack? Jack Black is Jack.
Sticking with the Jack actors.
Yeah,
that Jackers. Play a Jack character. The Jackters. Yeah, no, no. No, that's not my real answer. Who would I put?
There's a part of me that wants to see Andy Samberg take this on, but I don't know if he could do
zaniness. But doing a serious movie, okay.
But I don't know. Like, I think because I've seen him be zany so many silly ways that if I saw him do it this, like, I'd still find it funny.
Yeah. Maybe, okay, this is definitely just because I'm watching this show right now, but Rainn Wilson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he can do funny, and he can do lots of facial expressions and stuff, and he can be very expressive, but he can also do serious.
Yeah.
And he's got more of that dad type of, you know, he just looks like a dad who needs to work to make money through, like, I could, and again, I'm just watching The Office right now, so it's fresh
money. Well, that could really work.
But I could see Rainn Wilson. I would actually love to see Rainn Wilson in a serious role like this.
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor.
I'd pick Oprah Winfrey, but that's just because I'm not racist and sexist like you. So, next question.
That's fair. There's always time for me to change, though. would this movie be in your personal top 250?
I don't think so.
I'm going to assume that it's not going to be in mine.
Yeah.
If I was required to have one Kubrick in mine, this would be it as of right now. But
so wait, you don't suspect that this will be in your personal top 250, even though so far this is the highest rated Kubrick.
Wow. It's still close to the bottom. Like,
because I'm pretty sure, I don't remember what I said, but I'm pretty sure Strangelove and Paths of Glory, I said both of those would be.
Okay. I'm looking at this like in a literal sense. Like, it's like, I don't quite know, right? Because right now, Strangelove and The Shining are sitting at 24 and 25 out of the 39 movies I've put on my list right now.
Yeah.
And we're including my list will also include our subscriber specific episodes.
Yeah.
So
Silver Screen Bias is off 250.
Right. So as I build this list right now, it's in the bottom half of what I'm watching. And I can already think of like, I can just see it continuing to go down to the bottom. But as of right now, it's the best Kubrick film I like. Okay. And then we're adding a new question. Why do you think this is on the top 250?
I think part of it is just the Kubrick fandom is so huge. People who like Kubrick movies love Kubrick movies.
That's true.
And they love looking for hidden meaning and Easter eggs and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's part of it. I also think Jack Nicholson's performance in this is phenomenal.
He has some very iconic cinematic scenes. And I recently talked in an episode, I just watched Twister not too long ago, just for fun. This is The Shining's the movie that's playing when the tornado hits the drive-in movie theater.
I was saying that there's a bunch of 42 stuff.
Yeah.
The movie that they're watching, by the way, that TV is not plugged in, but the movie that they're watching is called like Summer of 42.
Wait, hold on. I'm trying to think, when were they watching a movie in the movie?
Danny and his mom are watching a movie together.
I thought it was News. No, no. That's right.
That does happen as
well. Scatman was watching Miami News. That's what it was. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they were watching a movie. The TV was not plugged in.
Yep.
So are the mom and son crazy too? Oh, I just.
And see, I think that right there, I think that's a huge part of why this is in the top 250, is it just kind of like, for the same reason the Clockwork Orange is, it just kind of like gets in you and eats at you and stays on your mind.
I did not notice the TV was unplugged. I love that, but like it confuses me even more.
Yeah.
Man.
Now, some people would look at this and say like all of this stuff with this inconsistency, it's just sloppy. And I think this was I think somebody could very sincerely come to the conclusion this is a sloppy movie. There's too much inconsistency. What is even the point? And I think that's totally fair.
And you could watch it and go, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. But I think it might also be fair to say, yes, and Kubrick did it on purpose to mess with you.
Yeah.
But it could also very well be because Kubrick said
everything is intentional.
It could well be because Kubrick's dead and can't comment that no, it is sloppy and Kubrick phoned this one in. Who knows, right? It's so hard to say.
Yeah.
But so that's why I think it's there. Why do you think?
There's not much to argue with what you said. Like, I mean, yeah, Kubrick fans are going to be Kubrick fans, which I'm glad the one Kubrick movie is not
Eyes Wide Shut or Spartacus.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Or The Killing, which I don't.
I don't know any of those. I know what Eyes Wide Shut is, and I have no desire to watch that. It is just
The Killing looks interesting.
It is just fascinating that, like, if it's strictly on the top 250 because of Kubrick fans, why is his whole list not on there?
Yeah.
Because,
well,
I've heard of
The Killing, Eyes Wide Shut, and Spartacus have been.
Right. And I've heard of Eyes Wide Shut a lot more than I have Paths of Glory and Dr. Strangelove.
So here's something that I meant to mention earlier and forgot to.
Do it now.
Tom Cruise, who famously stars in Eyes Wide Shut, has claimed that the entire time that they were making that movie, he'd walk in on Kubrick still editing this movie, which had been out for 20 years at this point.
Editing it?
Changing around scenes, tweaking it, fine-tuning it. Kubrick was never satisfied with it either. He's like, it's still neat. So it's just a weird movie.
That's weird. But yeah, so between the fan base, Jack Nicholson puts on a great show.
Yeah.
The Here's Johnny line, like,
I thought Scatman Crothers crushed his character as well.
I could have used more of him.
Yeah.
Like
I thought
there wasn't.
I thought the leading lady was fine.
She was okay. But I can.
Robert Duvall's wife.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue people off of. I'm not going to argue this movie off of other people's top 250.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it. I would watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
I'd watch it again. Actually, my wife wants to watch it, so I'll watch it with her. She was not able to watch it with me when I watched it the first time, but like.
So I mentioned that Jen and I watched it. It got late, and so I was like, I'll watch the last hour of it tomorrow and blah, blah. Jen says to me today after I finish, she's like, so what happens? I was like, well, just watch it. She's like, I'm not going to watch it. I was like, well, I'm probably going to watch this again. And she's like, I won't. And I was like, okay, well, and I just like gave her the rundown of the rest of the movie. And she's like, that's weird. I was like, yeah, you should watch it.
Cool story.
All right. Any other questions?
That's it. We've added the new question. That's it. They said the thing. They said the name. They said the name in the movie.
They didn't.
They did. The Shining.
No, he said Shining. Leave off the. It's cleaner. Oh, wait, that's the network. the okay. Facebook.
Well, they said Shining.
They said Shining. I think we give it to
them. Based on a book.
Based on a book. They name drop. They definitely name drop. Yeah.
I think we've covered all of our bases with this. Oh, is there any connection to this in Clockwork Orange?
Besides all the ones we've already mentioned?
Besides all of the ones that already exist.
Same director.
No, not that one. what's another one? That's all I've got. If you haven't heard, if you haven't listened to our bonus episode that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We launched a new thing, a new way for you to get involved, and for another opportunity for your voice to be heard on our podcast.
That's right.
And another way for you to support us. We've got merch. We've got a second. We've got more episodes coming out.
That's right.
For you to access. If you haven't heard, go listen to our anniversary episode, our year recap episode. What did we call on that episode?
We titled that The State of the Union.
The State of the Union. Go listen to that. It is out now. Came out a couple weeks ago on a Friday.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, Jeff, The State of the Union is good.
Good, 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 good. So check that out. We've got some cool things going on right now. And this is the beginning. We're in year two.
Yeah.
We're not even halfway done with the list.
Oh, so. I thought you were going to say through year two. I was like, we just started.
We're not even halfway through year two, and I'm already loving it.
Already regretting
it. We're halfway through month one of year two. but there's some cool things happening. Listen to that episode. Watch our social medias and stuff and see how you can get involved. Buy some merch. The exclusive shirt that we did with Cassie is only running till the end of the year.
That's right.
So make sure you get on that now.
It's a great Christmas gift.
Tell a friend. That's all I've got.
All right. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
If you found value in what we discussed today, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
If you have any feedback or suggestions, we would love to hear from you.
That's right. Tell us why we're wrong.
If you want even more content and ways to engage with us and each other, check out our Patreon page.
By supporting us there, you'll get access to exclusive bonus content and help us continue to create high-quality episodes, as well as help pay for our future plans. Links to our social media, merchandise, and Patreon are in the show notes.